listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio AM 820 brings you Family Sanctuary, a show that inspires living the gospel message in word and deed within our families. And now, Family Sanctuary with host Peggy Hartshorn.
Welcome to the Family Sanctuary, focusing on life-giving relationships and the family. I'm your host, Peggy Hartshorn, Chairman of Heartbeat International, that advances life-affirming pregnancy help around the world. And today, our program is called Navigating Through Adverse Prenatal Diagnoses. And that sounds a little bit technical. But what we're going to be talking about is something that's been in the news recently, this spring in 2024, because of the differences now in state laws regarding abortion. There have been a few cases, and one particularly that made the news, of a Texas woman who traveled to another state to have an abortion because she had had a diagnosis, her baby had a diagnosis during the mother's pregnancy of trisomy 18, which is called, that would be called a prenatal diagnosis by the medical community. They don't bother to say adverse prenatal diagnosis. And that says something about the reaction of the medical community when that kind of a diagnosis occurs. Their response is, of course, we refer this family to abortion. It's an immediate response of the medical community. So we're here to talk about today, are there other responses to that kind of news that a pregnant woman may receive, a couple may receive, that your baby has some kind of an abnormality? We've diagnosed it in the womb, and that could be something from Down syndrome, trisomy 18, actually, there are many different kinds of prenatal diagnoses. And our guest today, Andrea Trudden. Welcome, Andrea.
Hi, Peggy. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for saying yes. Andrea and her husband actually have their own story of an adverse prenatal diagnosis with Andrea's first pregnancy. And let me tell you the good news, she's got a beautiful daughter as a result of that pregnancy. And they made it through an adverse prenatal diagnosis, probably and mainly, I would say, Andrea, because you have that pro-life heart. You've had it probably ever since you were growing up, and you work for Heartbeat International. Andrea is now the Vice President of Communications for Heartbeat International. So you knew there were positive alternatives. So unfortunately, many people don't know that. So we're here today to talk about navigating through an adverse prenatal diagnosis. Andrea and her husband are members of St. Paul's Parish, and Andrea's been working for Heartbeat International. How many years, Andrea?
Oh, wow. It's 20 years now, but I claimed that I had a blip because I stayed home for 5 years, but then came back. So right. I walked away for a little bit, but I've been with Heartbeat since 2004.
That is amazing. And I remember when you were hired. So, yes, and you have three beautiful children, and I'm glad you had that respite where you could stay home with your babies at that point. But let's talk more, Andrea, today about navigating through adverse prenatal diagnoses. And because of this situation of the Texas woman mm-hmm. who actually traveled to another state to have an abortion, and unfortunately, she became a celebrity somewhat when she was introduced at the State of the Union address in 2024 as somewhat of a hero. Mm-hmm. All right, tell us just briefly about her story and why she went to another state to have an abortion. And we don't know whether she was ever given any alternatives to that. But tell us just briefly that story, Andrea.
Yeah, absolutely. And I want to start with you hinted at, there's such a variety of situations that qualify as a prenatal diagnosis.
Right.
It can be anything from Down syndrome or a heart defect or mm-hmm. Something that can be repaired upon birth or something that it's probably the child won't live long after birth. There is such a huge spectrum of situations that we do need to be compassionate about, because at that moment, no matter who you are, where you are, when you get that negative news, it's so important as to how you are told that and the support care that you are given in that moment, because it's such a delicate time, because that sets your trajectory as to how to go. Mm-hmm. So in this case, this is the story of Kate Cox, who, as you mentioned, she was celebrated at the State of the Union, partially, and it's so sad to me, based partially on a lie. She received a prenatal diagnosis of trisomy 18 with her child, who wasn't her first child. And with genetic testing and everything, we now know that we can have, we can find out these situations early on to set that pathway. But in Texas, in particular, if her life had been in danger, then her doctor would have been empowered to perform what was necessary in order to save her life. Because, of course, our goal is to save as many lives as possible in this movement. And what they kind of spun in the State of the Union was they made it sound like her life was in danger and she had to leave the state because no doctor would help her in Texas. And that wasn't the reality. Her child was diagnosed, yes. We don't know what her doctors told her in that room. We don't know what support she had, but we do know that she went to New Mexico because her doctors were not providing that service for her that she wanted, because she and possibly the doctors around her did not deem that child to be perfect. And therefore, she sought an abortion experience outside the state to try again and have a do-over with her child, which is very unfortunate that that is how some people will view this type of a situation, and even be told that by some healthcare professionals of, well, why don't you terminate this pregnancy and try again? Mm-hmm. And which completely devalues the life that is growing inside.
And interestingly, I just will interject quickly here. One of Heartbeat's board members, Gary Thome, who's from Texas, has actually written an article about this. I think it was in the Washington Examiner.
Yes.
Yeah. And he pointed out that almost the same time, there was another Texas couple who wanted to remain anonymous. They also received the same trisomy 18 test result as Kate Cox did, but their doctor suggested monitoring the baby and preparing for any needs that the baby might have. And the couple was connected with a pregnancy help organization. Many of our pregnancy help centers that are part of the Heartbeat International Network are prepared to give all kinds of love and support to people with an adverse prenatal diagnosis. And they were connected with the programs. Of course, the pregnancy center knew the support groups that were available and so forth. And a compassionate nurse at the pregnancy help center helped them understand and connect them with help. And then their baby, whose name was Grace, baby Grace, I'll read this just little line from the article Gary wrote, died naturally and peacefully in her mother's womb a few weeks later. And at her funeral, her parents celebrated her life with friends and family. Even in her short life, Grace's life had meaning and value. She was loved. So that's the alternative for some of these babies who will not survive birth or may only survive for a few days after they're born. Although some trisomy 18 babies have actually survived for years. And their families have loved and cared for them through that time. So, you know, it's there always is, I think we usually say in our movement, there's always an alternative to abortion.
And that's the thing, too, because we've known of some organizations for the past several years that have existed to walk families through this. There are perinatal hospices that are available because this is nothing new in our world. Unfortunately, some children are born with medical malformations or issues that may not even be detected until birth or may be detected early on. And then it is so important to really have somebody supporting you and encouraging you through along the journey. As you mentioned, baby Grace, her life had value and her family saw that. And so they were monitoring. And I don't want to insinuate that Kate Cox in her situation that they didn't see the value. I do just want to say that I think come in a world right now where we look for quick fixes on things. And this mindset of must be perfect. Everything has to be perfect. And you are in full control of every detail.
Or need to be. You should be.
Right. That gets down a spiral that is very negative. I go back to Iceland a couple years ago, touted the fact that they had a 0% Down syndrome birth rate. Well, the reason they had that 0% Down syndrome rate was because anybody who was diagnosed with Down syndrome was aborted. Mm-hmm. And we know the New York Times, there have been multiple studies that show that not all prenatal tests are accurate. And therefore, how many healthy, thriving children have been sacrificed in this ideal for perfection and right. perfect children and to be in complete control of every aspect of this. And I find that this becomes a very slippery slope mm-hmm. Because of the fact that in our desire to use science to find out the gender of the child and all the elements to be prepared, we're also then twisting it in a way of, oh, well, you know what? It's a boy, not a girl. And I really wanted a girl.
Right.
And so we start to see this in very negative ways, or it can go down that road very quickly. But in each case, again, it pulls back the value and understanding that these children are living creatures given to us by God and that they are gifts from God.
Sure. And even born with imperfections, let's say, mm-hmm. probably every baby. I just found out, by the way, that I had a congenital defect in my aortic valve that I never mm-hmm. knew about until just last year when I had to have that valve replaced. It was a congenital defect I was born with. I had no idea until many, many decades later. So I wonder how many of those defects can be even detected now. It's mm-hmm. a scary thought.
And it is amazing to see the science. It's so good. I mean, mm-hmm. so when my husband and I, when we received our daughter's prenatal diagnosis, that was 16 years ago. And to see how far science has come since then
right.
is amazing.
Sure.
So knowing that there are ways that we can detect these things, repair them, mm-hmm. and do everything possible to give our children the most loving time here on earth mm-hmm. and in our presence and just to be together as family. It really is so, so beautiful.
Sure. And to make the judgment that I want a perfect child mm-hmm. and therefore I will abort if the child is not perfect is even from a secular perspective. There was a mention in our article that we mentioned in the from our board member Gary Thome, mm-hmm. that one in 33 babies is born with a medical problem or disability today. And even the secular Americans, the Americans with Disability Act affirms that people with disabilities have equal value and dignity to be as able-bodied people. Mm-hmm. So even our secular law, Americans with a Disability Act, recognizes that. And it's a scary thing to realize that medical science is at the point, and we're not going to be talking today about in vitro fertilization, but in that case of in vitro fertilization, where babies are conceived outside the womb, even now they are testing them for mm-hmm. fetal abnormalities and only implanting perfect babies.
Right.
They can test for male-female, of course, if you want a girl, if you want a boy. But any child with a disability that they can detect at that point would not be implanted. So we already have the technology. It's such a scary thought, Andrea. And how many people with disabilities are in our own lives and our families' lives, and what value, what great gifts they are to all of us.
That's what I was going to say, too. It's the fact that we all know somebody who has Down syndrome or who has challenges that they've overcome, mm-hmm. and what inspiration they actually are in our lives and how joy-filled they are. I know, Peggy, our friends Derek and Julie Tennant, and Julie has Down syndrome, and she goes around the world sharing her story and telling everybody how much she loves her life. They actually refer to it as the love chromosome because she is so full of joy.
Right. She is. I've heard her speak.
She's such a sweetie, and they are hilarious. They do. They have their own little setup.
This is her brother she's going with.
Derek and Julie.
Yes.
They work together, and and she embraces her life. She's so happy. She's in, I think, her early 40s. Mm-hmm. And she has had such an adventurous life. And they make the most out of it.
Sure.
And everybody says, everybody loves Julie. She's such a joy. And so to know that people are, because they don't deem them as worthy or perfect, or the doctors don't, they're robbing the world of this joyful human being.
Right. And we're going to talk in a minute about your personal story. But first, I want to reintroduce our guest, who's Andrea Treden. She's the Vice President of Communications for Heartbeat International. She and her husband are members of St. Paul's Parish. They have three beautiful children. And we're talking today about adverse prenatal diagnosis. The sad fact that when many people, and in fact, I would bet the majority of people today have an adverse prenatal diagnosis, that something is not perfect about the baby they are carrying, the medical community and they themselves will be automatically jumping to the alternative of abortion. So we want to hear Andrea's story. And also I want to talk about in this second segment, the great resource that's available now. I'll mention the website, adverse prenatal diagnosis. The website and the general term used is prenatal diagnosis, prenataldiagnosis.org. Brand new website that brings together all the resources that we know of that can help families at this point when they get this kind of diagnosis, which is often just devastating to them. And so, Andrea, let's start, though, with your story. So tell us about your adverse prenatal diagnosis with your first child.
Yeah, so it actually takes us back to March 6th, 2008. And that was the day of my 20-week ultrasound, where we got up early. My husband and I went in. It was our first child. And we saw the screen and were able to watch the baby move and see the heart beating and hear the heartbeat. And we noticed that our doctor was quiet, but this was our first child. So, and it was early morning. So I remember thinking he may not be a morning person.
He wasn't as happy as you were.
And so we're watching everything. And then he points to the heart on the screen and he says, right here is her heart. And then right next to it was her stomach. And so me and my naivety, I'm like, okay, maybe it'll move down later. but then he starts walking us through. Our daughter had a hole in her diaphragm. She had a congenital diaphragmatic hernia. And that hole allowed, in total, her stomach, her spleen, her small intestine, and her liver to come up into her chest cavity, which shifted her heart over and hindered the growth of her lungs. So we hear this, and again, processing all the things. And I remember him telling us, it's okay to cry, because it was so new. We had no clue what we were dealing with. It would be through a series of appointments and research discussions that we then learned what our risks were, how to navigate it, and everything. Our doctor, God love him, he thankfully knew that I worked at Heartbeat International, and he is a very pro-life doctor as well. And he automatically put us on a very positive trajectory. He said, okay, this is going to be hard, but I'm getting you into a fetal specialist today. We're going to do essentially a deeper dive to see what all we're working with. And so he made his office made all the appointments to get us set up. And through that, we had a 3D ultrasound where that day we were able to see what a fighter she was, because mm-hmm. they had to do a lovely test where a needle was stuck in through my belly button, and which is a very odd feeling. And so we had to we were watching her on the screen, and she kept going for it. She was very curious. Mm. And so our doctor was trying to like poke my belly to get her to move, and she punched at him. So he said, well, she's a fighter.
Good.
And, yes. And everybody kept saying that for better or for worse, young girls are stronger fighters at birth when they are facing an adverse prenatal diagnosis. They actually... Don't quote me for this. I heard it from multiple people at Children's. It's called wimpy white boy syndrome.
Oh, dear.
So along the way, people would use that as an encouragement for us. And it mm-hmm. was helpful because we found out that she had up to 90% chance of not surviving. And
not surviving the birth or not surviving in the womb, did they say?
Not surviving after birth. Okay. So upon arrival, we knew that she was going to be hooked up to some heavy-duty respirators, and ultimately we had to get her healthy enough to have a surgery to repair the hernia. And so we went through multiple tests, as I mentioned, ultrasounds quite often, non-stress tests. I had to have an echocardiogram where I was very big, but put into a children's MRI machine, which was snug. But we were doing everything to see all aspects of what we were dealing with.
Right.
And all along the way, we got to do tours of the NICU, meet the head surgeon, and ask every question. We were asked multiple times, do you have any other questions? Because they wanted to prepare us. They wanted us to be as comfortable as possible to walk in and know exactly what we were getting into.
And they wanted to prepare for the baby.
Correct.
They wanted to prepare for her. What? How were they going to treat her when she was born? So what a wonderful example of a pro-life medical team you had, Andrea. What a blessing.
They were so wonderful. And we have a listing of all their names. We know the NICU coordinator, who's still there and still fabulous. She set us up for very positive experience. And so on walking through the rest of the pregnancy, we scheduled a C-section so that we would have doctors ready. And they were essentially on call. And so there were about four doctors in for me and about 15 for my daughter.
Wow.
And so it was amazing to see them just come around us. She was born. She cried. That was not expected because her lungs were very, very, very small. But that was a very positive sign. Yay. And so from there, we had 11 minutes with her at the hospital. And then she was taken to Children's, where she, again, was given the care. I was at Grant. And a week later, she had surgery. And we had our ups and downs in the hospital on the respirator and with her blood pressure and everything. But ultimately, we were able to leave Children's very positively with ongoing plan already in hand with another great pediatrician who had that background. And so we weren't just left, okay, go home and good luck. It was an ongoing relationship with multiple doctors. And it was very, very positive for us. And 15 years later, she is a very happy, healthy, smart young woman in high school.
And beautiful.
And she is still a fighter. She definitely brings an attitude with her in a very positive way to challenge people when they question anything, essentially, because she's 15. But that experience, we continuously remind her of how strong she is because of what we were able to walk through.
Wow. That's a beautiful thing. Praise God that you had such a wonderful medical team and that your daughter is so healthy. And, you know, I'm thinking as you were talking, I was thinking about the extensive medical care that's available in infant intensive care units. And just the stories I've heard lately about stories where they're not offering this care because of the cost. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm really concerned that as our culture becomes more and more anti-life, seemingly, that these kinds of resources won't be available. We know of stories where babies are born, for instance, at 21 weeks of gestation. And I believe that the medical research now shows at 22 weeks, there's a really good chance that that baby can survive at 22 weeks of gestation, born early. But at 21 weeks, there still have been babies that have survived, but the odds are not quite in their favor. So some hospitals are refusing to care for babies born at 21 weeks of gestation. So this is one thing that concerns me, Andrea, of course, the financial situation. So we need to pray that these kinds of resources will still be available to families with adverse diagnoses.
And that is the good thing about prenataldiagnosis.org and how that comes into play.
Yes, tell us more about that website and what's available there and Option Line answering it for us.
Yes, yeah, so a team of pro-life organizations, Be Not Afraid, Option Line Heartbeat, Charlotte Lozier Institute came together because they realized that this was a need. Of course, we knew of a couple organizations peripherally around the nation that were available to walk with families through perinatal hospice and such. But we wanted to kind of consolidate that information so that we could connect women and families with the resources in their communities. So mm-hmm. we have parent care coordinators who walk through a very good training that teaches them kind of how to or what resources are available. Because in my case, we had the most common rare defect. There are support groups that walk alongside those. And so the parent care coordinators have this information at prenataldiagnosis.org so that when somebody, a family is receives a, this diagnosis, any prenatal diagnosis, they find those local support centers, they find those local doctors and make that a support system around that family, no matter where they are in the nation.
Wow, that's phenomenal. And Heartbeats Option Line, which is optionline.org, mm-hmm. 1-800-712-HELP, answers calls not just for pregnant women who think they may be seeking an abortion and who are desperate, but for several other pro-life support agencies. So we're just thrilled that 24/7, 365, they're available with parent care coordinators. It's just such a beautiful thing when you realize how many people are so desperate when they hear and they don't know where to turn. And sometimes the medical community is just pushing them, as we said, mm-hmm. down one path. So, Andrea, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story and the great news of it's the website again. Please tell us the website again.
Yeah, for parents who receive an adverse prenatal diagnosis, the website is prenataldiagnosis.org.
Wonderful. And God is lifting up an army of pro-life warriors and people who love and support and were walking with anyone in need with a difficult pregnancy. So thank you again for being with us, Andrea, and for telling your story. And you have been listening to The Family Sanctuary on St. Gabriel Radio. I'm your host, Peggy Hartshorn. To find this program again and other programs from Family Sanctuary, go to stgabrielradio.com, choose podcasts, and then The Family Sanctuary. It's our program's broadcast at 4 o'clock on Saturdays and 2 o'clock on Sundays, right here on St. Gabriel Catholic Radio. So join us again to strengthen our families and make them sanctuaries of life as God intends.
Family Sanctuary is a production of listener-supported St. Gabriel Catholic Radio, AM 820. Archives of Family Sanctuary with Peggy Hartshorn are available at stgabrielradio.com.